Imagine a city where joy flows like water. Bells ring across Amalas as the festival of summer begins, sending swallows soaring into the air. Processions wind through streets lined with red-roofed houses and moss-covered gardens. Some move with dignified grace, led by elders in mauve robes. Others dance wildly to tambourines. All paths lead to the green fields, where young people prepare horses for races beneath mountains crowned with white gold fire against the deep blue sky. Amalas has no kings ruling with iron fists, no slaves suffering under oppression, no stock exchange breeding greed, no secret police instilling fear. Yet these aren't simple folk living primitively. They're sophisticated people who've mastered the crucial art of distinguishing between what brings true happiness and what leads to destruction. In our world, we often equate happiness with naivete and pain with depth. We believe true wisdom comes only through suffering. Amalas challenges this notion. Its citizens have found happiness that coexists with intellectual complexity and moral awareness. They celebrate life in all its sensory glory. If you wish to imagine orgies, go ahead. There is no guilt in Amalas, no shame in pleasure freely given and received. Beneath Omelas's perfect surface lies its terrible secret. In a small, windowless room, perhaps a basement or cellar, a child is kept in filthy misery. Malnourished, neglected, and utterly alone except for occasional visitors who come only to stare. The room contains just a mop and bucket, and the child sits in its own waste, whimpering for release that never comes. Every citizen learns this truth between ages 8 and 12, that moment when childhood innocence yields to adult understanding. They learn that their happiness, prosperity, art, science, and wisdom depend entirely on this one child's suffering. It's an ancient bargain. For Omelas to exist in perfection, this single child must endure unending torment. The revelation devastates each young citizen. Many see the child themselves, leaving in tears or rage, wanting to help but unable to act. The terms are absolute. If the child were released, cleaned, fed, and comforted, all of Omelas would wither away, its joy turning to dust. This central dilemma presents utilitarianism in its starkest form. One child suffers so thousands may live in perfect happiness. Mathematically, total happiness is maximized by this arrangement. Yet something in us recoils from this cold calculation. We instinctively feel there's something wrong with building societal happiness on an innocent's suffering. This reaction reveals pure utilitarian thinking's limitations, how it can justify terrible injustices in service of a greater good. What makes this moral problem powerful is its embedding in a vivid narrative. We don't just consider the question abstractly. We feel the festival's joy, hear bells ringing, see horses racing. We also feel the basement's damp chill and hear the child's whimpering. The dilemma becomes visceral rather than merely intellectual. The story further complicates matters by suggesting Omelas's citizens haven't achieved merely shallow happiness, but profound joy, encompassing wisdom, art, complexity, and moral awareness, a deep flourishing that seems worth preserving. How do Omelas's citizens live with themselves after learning about the child? Their acceptance isn't simple callousness. It's a process of rationalization, compartmentalization, and finding meaning within constraints. They reason that freeing the child wouldn't truly help it. After years of neglect, it's too damaged to comprehend freedom. They tell themselves the child's suffering enables thousands to live in joy and wisdom, believing this arrangement optimally distributes unavoidable suffering. Some dedicate themselves to making Omelas more beautiful, just, and wise, as if justifying the terrible price by making it worth the cost. They create magnificent art, develop profound philosophy, and build strong communities, living with extraordinary mindfulness and gratitude. Others simply compartmentalize. They visit the child once, absorb the terrible knowledge, then mentally lock it away. They don't forget, they cannot forget, but they continue without letting this knowledge poison every moment of joy. This psychological mechanism isn't unique to Omelis. We all employ it to function in a world where suffering exists, but we cannot fix it all. Some citizens, after seeing the child and understanding the bargain, find themselves unable to stay in Omelis. They don't organize protests or attempt rescue. They simply leave. Walking out of the city gates alone, they head toward the mountains and a destination impossible to describe. These individuals make the story's most mysterious choice. They don't try changing the system or saving the child, actions that would, by Omelis's rules, only cause more suffering. Instead, they remove themselves entirely, refusing to benefit from an arrangement they find morally intolerable. The walkers represent moral witness beyond conventional activism. They cannot fix Omelis's central injustice, but they can refuse complicity. Their departure is a quiet but absolute rejection of the utilitarian bargain underpinning the city. They choose uncertainty over paradise built on suffering. We never learn if they find another community or wander forever. This ambiguity is essential. The walkers aren't presented as having found a better answer. They've simply made the choice they must make to live with themselves. Though fictional, this story mirrors real-world ethical challenges, questioning how our comfort might depend on unseen suffering we choose to ignore. In today's globalized economy, comfortable lifestyles in wealthy nations often rely on exploitation, environmental damage, and resource extraction elsewhere. Our affordable goods frequently come at the cost of others' dignity. Like Omelis's citizens, we benefit from systems we didn't create but remain implicated in. Climate change offers perhaps the clearest parallel. Current generations enjoy carbon-intensive lifestyles, while future generations bear the consequences. Like the child in the basement, those who will suffer most had no voice in creating their predicament. The story also reflects personal ethical questions. How much should we sacrifice to help others? When should we abandon unjust systems, even if our departure changes nothing? How do we live knowing we cannot eliminate all suffering? The genius of this story isn't providing answers, but posing haunting questions. What price are we willing to pay for happiness? Can a society be just if it depends on injustice? What is our moral responsibility when we benefit from others' suffering? Perhaps we already live in Omelis, our prosperity dependent on others' suffering. Maybe we're all citizens of this moral dilemma, or perhaps some of us are the child in the basement bearing the cost of others' comfort. Or maybe some have walked away but remain imprisoned by compromises. The story doesn't dictate which interpretation is correct. It presents the question so vividly that we cannot help but continue asking it. In that questioning lies the beginning of moral awareness, the first step toward either acceptance or walking away. What would you do if your happiness depended on another's suffering? Would you stay in Omelis or walk away? Your answer reveals not just what society you want to build, but who you choose to be.